Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, I'm sure that if you've been watching the news lately on the political scene, you know that there's a lot of debate taking place around the subject of Obamacare and what real repeal and replace actually means. Of course, there's been a plan put forward by the Republicans, and the Republicans' plan is getting a lot of pushback, especially from conservative lawmakers and so forth, that are pushing back on this and saying that, wait a second, this isn't exactly what we had talked about. This doesn't look like repeal and replace. And so we're going to, they're not convinced that this is the right plan, that something different needs to be offered in order to really make a difference. In fact, I think it was Rand Paul who referred to this new GOP plan as being Obamacare 2 or Obamacare Lite, you know, those two things. So basically having all of the essential elements of Obamacare, but just tweaking those elements slightly. And in doing that, you know, it's just people aren't happy with it. They were looking for a lot more. They were looking for it to be completely removed. Well, Phil Kirpin, you know, Phil had been with me a number of times on the radio program. He's the president of American Commitment. He wrote about this subject, about Obamacare and about what President Trump was going to seek to do and what the new Republican Congress would seek to do and so forth. And he titled the article that he wrote about, this is, was written quite a while ago when President Trump first came into office. But the point that he makes there, I think, is important. And I think we're going to try to get Phil to elaborate on this point a little bit. But the article was entitled, "The President Opens the Obamacare Escape Hatch." And then he says Trump's executive order will make it easier to find an insurance plan that fits your needs. So in this article that he wrote, you know, he basically says that in that that executive order that President Trump gave, it already made a significant difference in the way that Obamacare is administered by the government. So it says this in the opening line of it. It says just hours after taking office, President Trump signed an executive order directing federal agencies to waive, defer, grant exemptions from, or delay any provision in Obamacare that burdens individuals, families, and insurers, and nearly anyone else who could be affected. This order takes full advantage of the vast discretion built into the law, which enabled President Obama to rewrite Obamacare on the fly. Mr. Trump's move is more than just a symbolic gesture. It is the first step toward repealing Obamacare. So that first step, you know, putting out this executive order that, you know, very broadly talks about waive, defer, grant exemption from, and delay. Phil Kirpin, the president of American Commitment, he is saying that this is the first salvo, was the first attempt at doing away and repealing Obamacare. Now, the question is, how does that relate with everything that's taken place? And also, you know, with the GOP plan, here to talk to us about that, about this article, and also about a little bit more about what's taken place recently with Obamacare is Phil Kirpin. You can find out more about Phil by going out to their website as well, as he's the president of American Commitment, and their website is www.americancommitment.org. Phil, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I started to read the opening paragraph of your article, and I know that it was written a long time ago, at the beginning. It seems like a long time ago, in the beginning of Trump's administration, you know, where he signed that executive order. So I wanted to talk about what you had stated at that point and then maybe we could fast forward up to where we are today in the whole Obamacare debate, and maybe I should say debacle, but the whole Obamacare debate.
Yeah, the strategy that we thought they were going to pursue when we wrote that article, which, you know, was 6 or 8 weeks ago now, it seems like an eternity, we thought they were going to say you can now sell non-Obamacare policies and we're going to waive all the fines associated with that and we're going to bring back the non-Obamacare insurance market that way. And they have not done that. They're not being that sort of aggressive in terms of pushing the envelope. They have done some things administratively to grant a variety of relief, including the IRS has now been instructed to accept tax returns without the form stating whether or not you have qualifying health coverage. And so if you don't have the coverage and you don't want to pay the individual mandate tax, you can just file without the form and they're not going to do anything. So they're essentially not enforcing the individual mandate. They've done some other things. As recently as this week, Secretary Price told states to apply for waivers for different types of reinsurance mechanisms to cover high-cost individuals and bring down premiums for everyone else. And he cited the example of what Alaska did. They were looking at a 47% premium increase. They instead created a new reinsurance mechanism to cover high-cost individuals in the individual market, and they think they got the premium increase down to something like 7 or 8% instead of the 47% they were looking at. Secretary Price has now told other states, look, if you want to adopt that model, you can get a backfill of federal grant money to reward you for all of the money that you save from that kind of a model. And so we may see other states pursue that. And so I think we're going to see a lot more in terms of administrative relief action soon. The way that the White House has described their strategy on this is they want Congress to pass some form of the repeal bill or the replace bill that's moving through right now. I think it's probably going to be significantly different than the current version, but that's what they're calling phase one, is the legislative repeal effort that's going on right now. Then they're saying phase two will be all of the administrative relief measures that they're going to pursue under that executive order, and they've done a couple things already, but I think they're saving a lot more until after that first bill passes. And then they're saying that the third phase will be efforts to supposedly work with Democrats on a bipartisan bill that won't be subject to filibuster, that can do things like across state lines and tackle prescription drug pricing and other things. I'm skeptical that Democrats will work together with this administration on anything, but that is the plan as they've laid it out.
It's such a complicated subject that I think that politically speaking, this could be a real problem for the Trump administration. We see progress being made on so many different areas and being made quickly, and yet we get to this one, and already we're talking about three stages here of implementation on it. Is this going to be a real problem politically, you think, for the Trump administration?
Well, you know, they're in a tough situation because this is a major campaign issue. The idea that they were going to repeal Obamacare and replace it with something a lot better. And, of course, this has been a major campaign issue for Republicans since this law passed. I think it was really sort of the main issue that led to Republicans taking over the House of Representatives in 2010, and certainly one of the main issues behind Republicans taking the Senate in 2014, along with immigration. And then I would say, again, for the presidency, it was one of the main issues, along with immigration again. So, you know, this is sort of either the number one or the number, you know, 1A issue that pretty much all the branches of government became Republican over. And so as challenging as it is to do anything on health care, and, you know, it's so difficult because, you know, there are always going to be winners and losers, and losers, that's a big political consequence. It's a very tough area to work in. But remember, if they do nothing, we're looking at a total collapse of the individual market. The Obamacare premiums are up 25% this year. We're probably looking at another 25% next year. Enrollment in the exchanges is collapsing. Premiums have approximately doubled in the 4 years that Obamacare has been up and running. And so you can't do nothing in the face of that. You know, the president has kind of said repeatedly, look, we could do nothing and then just blame Democrats for the collapse of the health insurance system in this country, and then maybe that might be okay politically, but you can't do that. You can't do that when people rely on insurance. So they really have to do something. But it's of course it's a very, very tough issue area to work in. And it's even more tough when you got to deal with a Democratic filibuster, and so you've got to use this budget reconciliation procedure they're trying to use, where they can only do things that have a significant impact on the budget. And so a lot of the things they would like to do to fix major problems in Obamacare, they're worried will be blocked on procedural grounds. And so they have a huge, huge challenge. I think you saw how huge the challenge is when you saw sort of what a mess this bill was when it came out and how complicated it is and how hard it is for everyone to understand. And I hope that they can simplify it and improve it, but because if they do nothing, if they pass nothing, that's a really bad outcome for a lot of people because these markets will continue to collapse.
In the New American the other day, on Saturday, Rand Paul, it says this, Republican health care plan is Obamacare light. Is Rand Paul right? Is this basically just Obamacare with a few tweaks to it? And if so, what do you think about Rand Paul in general, you know, and his solutions that he's offering?
Well, you know, I think it kind of depends on what you think the heart of Obamacare is. You know, you could say the heart of it is the individual mandate that requires people to buy government-defined insurance or pay a penalty tax. If that's the heart of it, it still repeals it. It gets rid of the individual mandate. If you think the heart of Obamacare is the system of federal regulation of insurance markets, which had previously been state-regulated, then this bill retains that. And so if that's how you define sort of the heart of the matter, then you would agree with it. So it's a little bit of a semantic or a definitional question. But the main point that I think is a very important one that he's making is, look, this bill keeps guaranteed issue and community rating, which is to say that under this bill, just like under Obamacare, you can't charge somebody more if they have more expensive conditions or higher risk for more expensive conditions, and you can't deny them coverage. Well, what does that do? That means that all else being equal, a lot of healthy people will not bother buying coverage because they know that after they get sick, they can buy it and they won't pay any more for it. And so if you have that kind of a system, you've got to come up with some other regulations to layer on top of that to try to get healthy people into the risk pool. And Obamacare does it by using the individual mandate. The GOP bill does it by having this continuous coverage provision where if you go 63 days without coverage, then you pay an extra 30% on top of your premiums when you come back into the market. And, you know, it's got a few other mechanisms. But the bottom line is, it doesn't do what I think is the single most important thing to do in an Obamacare repeal bill, which is return all of the regulatory control over insurance markets to the state. And, you know, there were about 10 states that had those regulations, a guaranteed issue community rating, before Obamacare passed, and they had sky-high premiums. They had totally dysfunctional markets at the state level, and for some reason we took that national. And, you know, I think that we really need to find a way to return insurance regulation to the states. But the challenge, the reason that Republicans say they cannot do that in this bill, is that will run afoul of the budget rules in the Senate, and it would require 60 votes to keep that in, and the Democrats will all vote against it. And so they're sort of held captive to the rules of the Senate and their unwillingness to break those rules in order to pass a better bill. And that's why you get sort of this suboptimal, to be kind, bill. Now, all of that said, I think this bill is a significant improvement over Obamacare. So it all depends on how you look at it, right? You know, if at the end of the day you're saying, you know, do we want to cut taxes $880 billion and cut spending $1.2 trillion and reduce the deficit $330 billion and, you know, have a better structured tax credit and you have all the other improvements in this bill, but you're going to have to keep the federal regulation of insurance markets. I mean, it's hard to say how you come down on something like that because it's really a question, I think, as a member of Congress, the way you have to look at it is, can I make this better? Can I help us pass something better by withholding my vote for this? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is yes, then you should withhold your vote and try to improve it. But at the end of the day, if nothing passes, if nothing happens, and we stay with Obamacare, which is collapsing the insurance system in this country, that's the worst possible outcome. So it's tough. I don't envy these guys who are members of Congress who have to deal with it.
Yeah, when you say collapsing it, too, you would think that something like, you know, that IRS form that you just mentioned earlier, you know, about that they're not going to enforce the tax that was, whether or not you had paid that fee or not, or that tax that was on there, that in itself would be involved in causing the current Obamacare to collapse, right? Because they were counting on that money in part of the scheme that they had put together that was Obamacare. So if you do even some of these smaller things like this, it's going to have an impact on the current version of Obamacare that we're currently under. Let me ask you another question, though. One of the things that's near and dear to my heart, and I don't understand all of the nuances of this. I don't know if there's anybody but you, Phil, who does understand all of the nuance of everything involved in Obamacare. But here's what I do understand. I understand that I just wanted to have a major medical type of a policy where I could basically be in charge of my own health. I could take out a policy that wouldn't cost me a whole lot of money, and it just gave me coverage from a catastrophic event. So if, God forbid, had cancer or something else that, was devastating to myself and to the family, then at least I had insurance that was there for that case. But the smaller things, I would handle myself, the broken bones or so forth, regular checkups or something like that. I was willing to pay for them myself and assume more of the responsibility for living a healthy lifestyle and so forth. That went away under Obamacare. I couldn't find that plan anymore. I had to have these expensive plans and pay for a bunch of things that I really didn't want. Am I a person like me? Am I going to be able to find under this new proposal that's out there an inexpensive insurance plan like that one that I described?
Good question. It's not completely clear what the plan offerings are going to look like under this bill because they retain the statutory essential health benefits, the 10 bullet points that are in Obamacare that every plan has to cover. And I think they did that, again, for procedural reasons, that they thought that they wouldn't be able to change that and get it through the Senate with only 50 votes, that it would require 60. That said, they have reduced the required actuarial value, and so you can have plans that don't cover quite as much from an actuarial standpoint. And the other thing is they have, I think you're going to see a much more robust use of state waivers, and so I think that you may see HHS grant states waivers to allow plans that are of the sort that you suggested. And the other thing that this bill does that I think will make it much easier for those types of products to be offered and to be attractive is it doubles the health savings account contribution limits. And that, I think, will make it much easier to pair those types of high-deductible policies that you're talking about with a health savings account so that people can get the tax benefit of using pre-tax dollars for those day-to-day health expenses that they're not submitting to insurance. And so that's, I think, the direction that they want to go with this, although one of the parts of it, really going after those essential health benefits, I think would make it much easier. That was in an earlier draft of the bill, but it's not in the version now, and I think that was for procedural reasons, which means that aspect of it probably has to wait for that phase three effort where they're trying to put a bill together that can get 60%.
Phil, is part of these different proposals also going after pharmaceutical, to bring these prices down on the meds that people are buying, or is that going to be, yet another stage to this later on?
They're saying that's going to be part of the phase three later on, and that's an area where they think they can get bipartisan support. It's something Democrats have been talking a lot about. I mean, the challenge is that most of the policy ideas that Democrats want to pursue to bring down drug prices are kind of questionable policies because they're very heavy-handed policies that try to force prices down through government mandates and controls and so forth, which I think would reduce research and development and finding new cures, which is something you definitely don't want to do. We want to get the incentives right to actually cure diseases as much as possible. And so you've got to be real careful in that area. I think there's a huge opportunity, though, especially when you consider that this administration is really committed to deregulation and cutting regulatory burdens and making it easier to go through the government sort of maze of red tape. And the FDA is an agency that is notorious for taking years and years and years and costing millions and millions and millions of dollars to get any kind of approval through. And I would love to see that considerably cut and streamlined. It costs over $2 billion now to bring a new drug to market. And I also think that, there are a lot of things we can do that would be bipartisan. And part of it also, I hope, it's going to be discussed in the context of renegotiating some of these trade agreements because almost the whole rest of the world pays almost nothing for prescription drugs, including prescription drugs from U.S. companies, because they have these price control regimes. And if we would put that on the table in these trade negotiations and tell countries like Canada, look, you're going to pay a fair price for the drugs you get from the U.S., you're not going to pay pennies on the dollar, and we could get that through in some of these trade agreements, we could bring prices down here by getting the rest of the world to pay a little bit more of their fair share of the research and development costs. And so I hope that that will also be on the trade agenda as well.
Last time you and I talked, we talked about the RAINS Act and, of course, reining in the regulators and all of these other areas, especially like the EPA and so forth. Does that RAINS Act, though, does that have implications on health care as well?
Oh, it has big implications on health care. If you consider the way that the Obama administration sort of aggressively rewrote the law on the fly constantly, you know, all of those rewrites, those would have had to be sent up to Congress to be voted on, and a lot of them would have been voted down if you had a system like the RAINS Act. And so really, and for your listeners who don't remember, this is a bill that for any economically significant regulation, the agency that wants to impose it would have to send it up to Congress for a vote first before they could put it into effect. You need to get a majority in the House and Senate. And it really would be the biggest structural game changer in terms of returning power to our elected officials and forcing them to make the real decisions instead of letting them outsource you know, all the most important decisions to the unelected bureaucrats and regulators. And there's really no area of federal policy that wouldn't be affected by it, because there's no area that hasn't had this problem of all the power being delegated away. And this is a major focus, I think, of the Trump administration. They put a whole task force together on deconstructing the administrative state. They've had a series of executive orders to try to get a handle on the state of affairs and to fix things inside the executive branch. I think that I'm really optimistic that we're going to be able to turn the tide on this whole problem of, you know, sort of the regulators and the bureaucrats controlling our lives and our families and our businesses. That, I think, is the area I'm most optimistic about under the Trump administration. They've been very aggressive, and they've hired very good personnel so far to do it.
One final question. The most recent news out today was about the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, basically giving a thumbs down to the current plan that's being offered, you know, talking about how expensive it would be and that it wouldn't save the type of money that they're saying it would save and so forth. How significant is that?
Well, actually, I thought the fiscal score was actually very favorable. It was the coverage projections that were not. The fiscal score, they said this bill cuts federal spending $1.2 trillion. It cuts taxes about $880 billion. And it cuts the deficit about $330 billion. So you've got major deficit reduction, major spending, major tax cuts. I think that's pretty favorable from a fiscal standpoint. But they also said, pretty implausibly, in my view, they said that this is going to reduce the number of people with insurance 14 million next year and 24 million at the end of the next 10 years. And the assumptions that they have in that are very flawed. For instance, they assume that there are 15 million people in the Obamacare exchanges this year and there will be 18 million next year. That's the assumption that they start from when they say how many people will drop coverage. Well, there are only about 9 million right now, and the enrollment period is closed. So we know they're 15 million for this year is wildly wrong, and the idea that 18 million next year, I think, is similarly wrong. It's going to be around 9 or 10 again. So when they say 14 million less for next year, well, they're starting with a number that's 8 million too high. Mm-hmm. So the 14 million is probably more like 6 if you fix the baseline. And then you got to ask, well, why might we have 6 million less people next year with insurance? Well, if you change insurance from mandatory to voluntary, a lot of people will choose not to buy it because they no longer are being told they have to. And
right.
So, and CBO even says that most of the reduction is because of the mandate, and people who choose not to buy. And so they're bad numbers on the surface, but I think they're very misleading, especially because their baseline assumption about how many people are enrolled in Obamacare is clearly wrong. And, you know, I wish the media would point out that assumption, that because to me, you got to knock that number down right off the bat, just based on where they're starting being obviously wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all I heard was the negatives and read about the negatives of that CBO report and so forth, focusing on all that you just mentioned there. Phil, thanks so much for your time today. Snowed in at home there at in D.C., right?
Yeah.
Is it as heavy as what they anticipated?
No, I mean, there wasn't as much snow as they were saying. It's probably only 3 or 4 inches, but it's a very heavy, very, very heavy, like,
wet snow,
because it was mixing in with rain, and the streets are not great, and the kids' schools are closed, which is the main thing, so that's...
All right. Maybe a little sledding today is in your forecast. We'll see.
Yeah.
Okay, Phil, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
All right, have a good one.
You too. That was Phil Kirpin. He's the president of American Commitment. You can go out to his website at www.americancommitment.org to find out all the information about the various things that Phil writes about and everything that his organization there, American Commitment, is involved in. The particular article that I referred to during the broadcast today was found in the journal. We're talking about the Wall Street Journal, and that article was called "The President Opens the Obamacare Escape Hatch." Remember this, the Lord Jesus Christ said, He said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free." We'll see you next time, right here on Knowing the Truth.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the donate button.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.